Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports. Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
First leg quarterfinal action kicks off later Tuesday evening in the UEFA Champions League, European club football's top competition. In Italy, Juventus will host Barcelona, and in Germany, Borussia Dortmund is at home against AS Monaco. Barcelona superstar Lionel Messi of Argentina goes into the match against Juventus as the top scorer in this season's Champions League tournament with 11 goals. 2 weeks ago, World Football's governing body, FIFA, suspended Messi for 4 international matches for insulting an assistant referee in a game against Chile. But the suspension doesn't apply to his Barcelona club duties. And speaking of penalties, Messi's head coach at Argentina, Edgardo Bauza, has been fired as the 2-time World Cup champions struggled to qualify for Russia 2018. The 59-year-old Bauza was in charge of Argentina for only 8 matches, guiding the team to 3 wins, 2 draws, and 3 losses. Argentina is currently in 5th place in the 10-team South American World Cup qualifying group. Only the top 4 teams are assured of qualifying for next year's tournament in Russia. But let's get back to the UEFA Champions League now. While Lionel Messi has been Barcelona's top scorer in their campaign, Gabonese striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, the 2015 African Footballer of the Year, leads Borussia Dortmund with 7 Champions League goals. And let's give a sunny side of sports shout-out for Aubameyang's Dortmund teammate, American Christian Pulisic. Last month, Pulisic scored his first UEFA Champions League goal in a 4-0 victory over Benfica, making him Borussia Dortmund's youngest ever scorer in the competition at the age of 18 years, 5 months, and 18 days. Pulisic is also the youngest player to score in a World Cup qualifier for the United States, and he's getting more and more playing time for the USA as it tries to qualify for Russia 2018. In more World Cup news, the United States, Mexico, and Canada have joined forces in a bid to host the 2026 World Cup. The official announcement was made in a skyscraper in New York City, more than 100 stories above Lower Manhattan. And U.S. Soccer Federation President Sunil Gulati says it's a fitting venue.
It's a pretty extraordinary place. This building, the sights from this building, a lot about New York, a lot about the United States. You can see Red Bull Arena on one side, which is obviously part of the legacy of World Cup 94, and you can see Giant Stadium on the other side, where we had Copa America some months ago. And the last time I stood here, almost in this very spot, was to say goodbye, goodbye to Copa America. And now, today, we're saying hello, hello to something else. And what we're saying hello to is the 2026 World Cup and our efforts to bring that back to the United States, Canada, and Mexico. I can't think of a better place to do that with Lady Liberty outside. And you can truly see Canada and Mexico from here, as well as virtually every other nationality in the world within sight from here in Manhattan, in New York. The diversity of this country is extraordinary, and we look forward to welcoming the world after what we hope is a very successful bid.
U.S. Soccer Federation President Sunil Gulati says the bid would have 75% of the World Cup matches played here in the United States.
The general parameters of that bid are a World Cup of 80 games, three quarters of which would be played in the United States, 60 games in the United States, and 10 each in Canada and Mexico. The final decision on those things are up to FIFA. It's their tournament, but that will be our proposal, and that is our agreement together. Why is this important to U.S. soccer? If you look at everything that's happened since 94, the growth of the game, especially the growth of Major League Soccer, the growth of the NASL and our other pro leagues, the USL, and of player development, it was an extraordinary impetus. We now have a women's professional league and successful men's and women's national teams. Another World Cup here would further that, and it would do the same in Canada, and maybe Canada is where we were 20 years ago, and what a growth spurt would happen there. And it would bring back the World Cup to Mexico. The first World Cup I went to was in 1986, an extraordinary event, the World Cup of Diego Maradona. The last World Cup I went to was in Canada and watching the U.S. team win there, another extraordinary event. So we think it would be extraordinary in terms of the growth of the game in North America.
We just heard Sunil Gulati say how the last World Cup he went to was in Canada. He's referring to the Women's World Cup, which Canada hosted in 2015. Canada has also hosted youth World Cups. Mexico, meanwhile, hosted the World Cup in 1970 and 1986, and the USA welcomed football's premier event in 1994. U.S. Soccer Federation President Sunil Gulati adds this joint bid to host the World Cup in 2026 is backed by U.S. President Donald Trump.
We have the full support of the United States government in this project. The President of the United States is fully supportive and encouraged us to have this joint bid. He is especially pleased that Mexico is part of this bid, and that's in the last few days we've gotten further encouragement on that. So we're not at all concerned about some of the issues that other people may raise. We looked at bidding alone and decided in the end we wanted to bid with our partners in North America, and we have a strong encouragement from President Trump to that very end.
That's Sunil Gulati, the president of the U.S. Soccer Federation, and he was speaking in New York City.
Yeah. I'm out at Brooklyn, now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to De Niro, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my top, sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee, tell by my attitude that I most definitely from.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Join us this Tuesday as we take a look at autism, a neurological and developmental disorder that begins early in childhood and affects how a person acts and interacts with others, communicates, and learns. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voenews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Thanks, Lenore. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The Ghana Football Association recently reappointed Kwesi Appiah as head coach of the country's national team, the Black Stars. The 56-year-old Appiah replaces Israeli coach Avram Grant, who resigned after leading Ghana to the semifinals of the 2017 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Gabon. Appiah previously coached the Black Stars between 2012 and 2014, and he led Ghana at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. Before Appiah was brought back, Ghana's former international player, Ni Odarte Lamte, told Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori he thought Kwesi Appiah was a good choice.
For me personally, I think if we give it to Kwesi Appiah, he's been there before, he has played for Ghana before. And for me, when he left, the one who came to replace him, I don't see that the person has overtook him. So if we think we made a mistake and we are going for him again, I think it's a right decision. But qualifying for the World Cup, I think for me personally, I think the way our football is going now, we just have to hold on, give ourselves maybe 2 to 4 years, make sure we correct all our mistakes. Our local league should be polished, pay players well. Not everybody should be going outside just like that. And I'm sure when we are able to do that, I'm sure we'll be able to bounce back in Africa and all over the world again.
Your man, when do you think an African country can lift the World Cup trophy?
It's difficult, but if we are able to do our things well, we should be able to do it, because I think for close that we have gotten through the, it's quarterfinals, right? And I'm sure if we are able to do our things well, we should be able to pass that quarterfinal, go to semi, and then maybe final. Winning it will be very, very difficult, but if we do, as I said, if we are able to do our things well, why not? Because now we have a lot of Africans in Europe learning. But if you are able to bring that learning, bringing it back into African football, I'm sure, yes, it's difficult, but we should be able to do it in the near future.
That's Ni Odarte Lamte, Ghana's former international football player. And Ni was talking with reporter Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori in Ghana's capital, Accra.
Is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. More African football news, and let's give another Sunny Side of Sports shout-out for Togolese star Emmanuel Adebayor. He scored a hat trick for the Turkish club Istanbul Basaksehir in their 4-0 victory over city rivals Galatasaray. The ex-Arsenal and Tottenham striker scored twice before the break, and Emmanuel completed his hat trick with a header just before the hour mark. Mustafa Pektemek, who replaced Adebayor, added the final goal with 4 minutes left to play. Emmanuel Adebayor told reporters after the game, and I quote, "I think it was my first hat trick since 2011 when I played for Real Madrid." The 33-year-old Adebayor now has 5 goals for Başakşehir since joining the Turkish club as a free agent in January. Başakşehir is 5 points behind first-place Beşiktaş in the Turkish Super League with 7 matches remaining. Elsewhere, Liverpool's Senegalese striker Sadio Mane was scheduled to have an operation on his left knee on Tuesday, and he'll miss the rest of the English Premier League season. Mane damaged cartilage in his knee in a collision with Everton defender Leighton Baines in Liverpool's 3-1 home win. The 25-year-old Mane is scheduled to be sidelined about 2 months. Liverpool is currently in third place in the English Premier League with 63 points, 12 behind first-place Chelsea, and they have 6 games remaining. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you.
Maybe a little programming note, Andrew, for our Voice of America listeners. Got a big race coming up next week in Boston on the 17th of April. And I understand you'll be in Boston providing us with some coverage.
I will be. I'm excited to join you from afar in Boston. We're going to talk about the race and do some color commentary kind of about what's going on the race course there. I will be up there because I have a very good friend who's running the Boston Marathon for his second time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But this is the first time that I am ever going to the Boston Marathon. So I'm very excited to be there and excited to share that experience with you and all our listeners.
Always exciting to hear about the Boston Marathon. I know a few years ago we had that terrible bombing, so let's hope for a peaceful race with no injuries. And we look forward to your reporting, Andrew.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually very interesting in talking to my friend as he's qualified for this Boston Marathon. He said that following the bombings, there was so much interest in the race and people wanting to participate that the qualifying times actually got much more difficult. So that it's harder now to qualify for the race and you have to run faster than you did before because so many people want to run the race now.
Once again, the Boston Marathon will be run on April 17th, always the Patriots Day holiday in Massachusetts.
Yes, and a big day for sports in Massachusetts there, not just because of the Boston Marathon, but they always have an early Boston Red Sox game. I think they do it early in the day before the marathon or right during the end of the marathon, usually, so that it's a big sports day all throughout Boston.
Well, what's trending outside of Boston in the sports world, Andrew?
Outside of Boston, but still in the U.S. and in a broader sense, North America. You were just talking about soccer. And for North American soccer, a big announcement that they are bidding to host the 2026 World Cup. Now, of course, 2018 is going to be in Russia. 2022 is going to be in Qatar. And 2026, they're hoping, will be a joint bid between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. It'll be the first time that they have had a joint kind of continental bid like this for 3 countries to host it. But a lot of people on social media noting that it tilts heavily in the U.S. favor. 60 games or so would be played in the U.S., 10 in Mexico, 10 in Canada. So more of a U.S. World Cup with supporting roles from Canada and Mexico. U.S. soccer chief Sunil Gulati said that he anticipates that from the quarterfinals onward, it would be played in the U.S. Not sitting well with a lot of fans, particularly in Canada and Mexico. They're saying that they should be more equitable and share the wealth. Some fans seeing that it should be played in Mexico City's Estadio Azteca, and that would be a great place to highlight in such a fantastically historic stadium. Of course, it's got its own issues with the air quality and the high altitude, but it is, despite the back and forth on where games should be played and when, is generating a lot of excitement among North American soccer fans. I think there's a lot of people behind this, and they're hoping that it does happen.
Mexico probably has a prouder pedigree in terms of hosting a World Cup than Canada. Canada has hosted the Women's World Cup in 2015, but it's never hosted the Men's World Cup. However, the Mexicans, as I mentioned earlier, they hosted the Men's World Cup in 1970 as well as 1986. I think a lot of people remember that for Diego Maradona. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see whether maybe some of those later round matches get moved across the border, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's what fans are hoping for, that equity. But the other thing, in light of 2018 in Russia, 2022 in Qatar, a lot of people pointing out that in 2026, if they decided to do this, the U.S., Canada, and Mexico already has all these facilities. They wouldn't have to build more facilities. Of course, MLS soccer is very vibrant in the U.S. and growing, so there'd be a lot of places where they could hold these matches, even aside from the MLS stadiums, in American football stadiums or baseball stadiums. So that's one of the big points that people are making, is that all these stadiums are already constructed, whereas with Russia and Qatar, they've had some issues with labor and funding for some of their stadiums. It wouldn't be a problem for North America.
And one point the president of the Mexican Football Federation made, Andrew, was even if most of the matches are held here in the United States, in venues like Los Angeles, even here in Washington, very large Hispanic populations, so they would still give that sort of Spanish influence in some of these big U.S. cities.
Yeah, and a lot of the venues too, you know, Los Angeles, San Diego, California, Phoenix, Arizona. They could hold games in Texas, a lot of these states that are right along the U.S.-Mexico border. And by the same token, along the U.S.-Canada border, you could have it in Minnesota, in the Pacific Northwest, where soccer is incredibly popular here in the U.S. So there are ways that they could have them in the U.S., but get fans from all different countries to attend.
What else is trending in the sports world, Andrew?
Well, it was a moment 108 years in the making this past fall when the Cubs won the World Series after that 108-year drought. Well, the Chicago Cubs had another 108 years in the making until last night when they finally got to hoist their banner that they've won for the World Series, hoist that banner up above Wrigley Field. And it was, fans were just... The reaction on social media, people, everything from excitement to people tearing up and saying they were getting emotional, something they thought they would never see in their lifetime, something, in fact, a lot of Cubs fans never did get to see in their lifetime. But it was not a day or not a night without some problems from the weather. There was a slight rain delay, so they had to put it on hold for a little bit. But there was one person, I saw this in a social media post, they had a sign that said, "What if I told you 17 minutes of rain would wash away 108 years of drought?" Taking that language from the, I think it's ESPN here in the U.S., they do those specials. So they say, "What if I told you this?" So I thought that was kind of a nice way to put it. You know, you can wait for 17 minutes after 108 years. But during that rain delay, they actually did something very interesting. They put up on the Jumbotron Dancing with the Stars. Now, that's because the World Series winning Cubs catcher David Ross retired after the Cubs won the World Series. Nice to go out on a high note. He retired and decided to join Dancing with the Stars, one of the athletes joining this season, as we talked about Simone Biles, Nancy Kerrigan, a number of athletes performing this season. So in all in good fun, they put up his performance of Dancing with the Stars okay. last night. It airs Monday here in the U.S. They put that up on the Jumbotron, and so everybody got to watch that in the park during the rain delay. So it was a nice nice way to commemorate him, I guess, even though it wasn't exactly baseball related.
Well, speaking of Dancing with the Stars, Andrew, any Bill Murray sightings in Chicago with this unveiling of the banner and the trophy and everything?
You know, not that I saw when I did my look through social media, but I'm sure he was, if not there in person, and there in spirit. And I'm sure he was there. And a lot of big Chicago celebrities there in Wrigley Field for this moment. I think it's Pete Ricketts, who's the owner of the Cubs, getting a lot of credit. He threw out the first pitch, or one of the four people to throw out the first pitch before the game, while he was holding the World Series trophy. And it looked like a strike that he threw. So pretty good that he can hold that trophy. If I were him, I wouldn't want to let go of that trophy either. I'm clutching onto that with dear life, even when I'm throwing that first pitch.
Thanks, Andrew. VOA social media reporter Andrew Palcheski. And that wraps up the April 11th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. We'll be right back.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
According to the Famine Early Warning Systems Network, or FEWSNET, in 2017, some 70 million people across 45 countries will need emergency food assistance. Severe drought and economic instability are part of the problem, but so is violent conflict. Indeed, it's important to stress that these crises are largely man-made with other compounding factors, said Matthew Nims, acting director of USAID's Office of Food for Peace. This is certainly true of South Sudan, Nigeria, and Yemen. Famine was declared in parts of South Sudan in late February, while Nigeria and Yemen are at high risk of famine. In South Sudan, the civil war that began in December 2013 as a consequence of the power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar escalated into a civil war. An estimated 5.5 million people, nearly half of South Sudan's population, will face life-threatening hunger due to this man-made crisis. In Nigeria, an estimated 5.2 million people will face severe food insecurity by June, particularly those displaced in Borno State. There are signs that famine likely occurred in 2016 and may be ongoing in parts of the state that humanitarian actors are unable to reach, said Acting Director Nims. The United States, said Mr. Nims, has provided nearly $386 million since fiscal year 2016 for people affected by the ongoing crisis in the Lake Chad Basin region. In Yemen, over 17 million people are food insecure, 7 million of whom are in need of emergency food assistance. Starting in fiscal year 2016, the U.S. government has contributed nearly $432 million in humanitarian assistance to Yemen, said Mr. Nims. In South Sudan, the United States has not waited for a famine declaration to intervene and will continue to respond robustly to save as many lives as possible. The U.S. is the single largest provider of humanitarian assistance to South Sudan, having provided more than $2.1 billion since the start of the conflict in December 2013. We remain committed to providing humanitarian assistance around the world as both a moral imperative and as a direct benefit to the well-being of the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join us this Tuesday as we take a look at autism, a neurological and developmental disorder that begins early in childhood and affects how a person acts and interacts with others, communicates, and learns. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I am your host Shaka Sali. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the Anglophone crisis in Cameroon. The nation's English-speaking minority regions say they are being politically and economically marginalized by the Francophone government. Cameroon politics, an in-depth discussion on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30. UTC.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day.
Some things change, some remain the same.
From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.